Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Born into a working-class family in Rochester, Louis Gramatico was just the right age to have his entire worldview warped by Elvis and the Beatles, and before long he found himself drawn to rock music, first as a drummer, then as a vocalist. Singing and songwriting ultimately became Lou Gramm's trademark, bringing him from the bars and clubs of upstate New York to the height of the charts with Foreigner. Like any good rock story, Gramm's is full of ups and downs. He sold millions of records and became an iconic radio voice thanks to hits like Feels Like the First Time, Cold as Ice, Hot-Blooded, and Jukebox Hero. But his relationship with Foreigner's Mick Jones has often been strained, and at the same time, Gramm has suffered from drug and alcohol addiction. Then, in his mid-40s, he was told he had an inoperable brain tumor. Gramm survived that brush with death and remained in the music business, both with the band that he led to arenas around the world and by himself. Lou Gramm recounts his life and work in his new memoir, Jukebox Hero, My 5 Decades in Rock and Roll, published by Triumph, and it's a pleasure to welcome him to the Roundtable. Thanks for being with us.
Sure thing, Ian. Good to be here.
Your father always said that you could never make a living at music, that it was a fine hobby, but nothing more. Why did you not let that advice deter you?
I think I was drawn to the artistic side of it, and I felt that if I paid attention to that and just didn't use music as a way to make a few bucks, you know, on a weekend, if I really took it to the limit, that I felt that I could make a living at it.
There's a moment in your musical evolution and in your life that was a pivotal moment, and it took place on the side of the highway in Albany, New York. It was the Christmas season, I believe. I was really interested to see how you sort of left the side of the road in Albany and continued on your upward trajectory.
My band, Black Sheep, we had just finished our second album on Capitol Records, and we were slotted to open for Kiss, who also released a new album. And that was a huge break for us. And our first show was in Boston on Christmas Eve, 1974. We performed with Kiss. We got a standing ovation. We did an encore, and we listened to Kiss. And then the guys in the band piled into a big old Ford Galaxy, and we drove back to Rochester so we could be with family on Christmas Day. Our crew packed up our truck and set out for Rochester about 2.5-3 hours later. And just by the Albany exit, they hit a patch of ice, slid off the New York State Thruway, and the truck tipped over. I got a call from one of the crew guys. They were all a little banged up, but nobody hurt bad. And I got in my car on early Christmas morning and went back to pick them up. The truck was righted on its wheels and flatbedded to a service station, and we managed to pry the overhead door open to see what the equipment looked like, and it was in bad shape. I'd say about 80% of it was not usable. So although we managed to get home and celebrate Christmas, it wasn't much of a celebration because we were supposed to leave to continue the tour with Kiss the next day, and we had no equipment and no means to get the equipment anyplace. We were begging our parents, first of all, to help us out with some money for equipment and an old used truck, and there was kind of a recession in the U.S. around that time. Nobody's parents had that kind of money to help us out with. We asked our record company, Capitol Records, if they would front us some money so we can get back on our feet to tour with Kiss and promote the album. They refused us. We lost the tour, obviously, because we couldn't travel, and we lost our record contract.
At that moment, how did you not look at that as a sign that you shouldn't be in the music business anymore?
It wasn't such a bad omen concerning the band. It's just one of those things that you got to deal with in upstate New York. There's always ice, you know. And I was determined to somehow continue. I knew it would take time, but I still believed in Black Sheep.
Fast forwarding in the story a little bit, eventually Black Sheep kind of runs out of momentum and you get this chance to go audition for another group and they like you. What were the early days of Foreigner like? Like, how did you know that there was a creative spark? What was it like getting together and writing songs with Mick Jones early on?
It was great. He had a small but nice apartment on the Upper West Side, and I was living in a tiny apartment temporarily near the UN building. So I would catch a cab over to Mick's house around early in the afternoon, and we would work till about 10 or 11 at night. And, our first few sessions, the first few days we worked together, yielded Long Way From Home and At War With The World and some things like that, you know. And eventually Cold As Ice and a number of other songs that were on Foreigner's first album. So there was electricity in the writing partners already.
You two recently were back in touch for the first time in a long time. What's the state of that relationship today?
It's very tentative. The reason I called him, because he and I were both going to be inducted in the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Just like that. I mean, it'd been so many years.
Figured he was either going to, hang up on me or talk to me. And he was quite cordial. He sounded he sounded good. He sounded in good spirits, and it was actually really nice to talk to him again.
You know, rock fans can list off any number of songwriting partnerships that have started off great and ended not so great. What makes the relationship not sustain, in your experience?
At a certain point in Foreigner's career, Mick was not as open to my contributions and started to write and complete songs himself and I think felt more satisfied working alone than working with me.
How did you deal with that?
It was a reality I had to face, but I am a songwriter as well as a singer, and I continue to write songs.
You know, you've been out on your own with your own group since leaving Foreigner. Do you want to do another tour as Foreigner? Would you be open to that? Is this Songwriters Hall of Fame induction maybe just the prelude to something bigger?
I couldn't really say. I hear little smatterings of talk, but all from the press. I certainly haven't discussed it with Mick or anyone, and I doubt he has too. He has his own band that he calls Foreigner, you know, and I just don't know if that would work.
You've also recently been talking about retiring from the rock game, and that interested me because your first rock concert, you snuck out to see the Rolling Stones. And, of course, later you got to open for the Rolling Stones, so that came full circle. But they don't have any signs of slowing down. They're celebrating 50 years out on the road. I mean, can you see that being the model for you, or that doesn't appeal?
Well, the thing is, the Rolling Stones, you know, they're one of the originators of that brand of rock. They transcend time. And when they go out on the road, they make a phenomenal amount of money. I'm sure their expenses are phenomenal, too. But I think that every one of them is well taken care of financially. And, with the way the economy is in the U.S., people are cutting back on certain things like vacations, big parties, and extravaganzas. And I think... I think along with that goes rock concerts. Attendance is down all over, I think, and we've had to cut our price. You know, we've had to take less to continue to play, and it's reaching a point now where we're nearly at a break-even point. And at that point, why would I want to continue to go out and lose money going out? You know.
So it's not necessarily that you're tired of the road or, you know, you don't want to play the same songs every night anymore. It's more an economic thing.
It certainly is, and I enjoy playing those songs. You know, I was part of them, and whether I wrote them or not, you know, I sang them for sure, and I still enjoy playing them. I still enjoy performing. I mean, at some point, I know, you know, you can use the Rolling Stones, but I don't want to be 70 years old trying to strut around the stage singing Hot Blooded. I would like to continue for a few more years if there was financial justification, but it's to the point now where it's just about break even, and in some situations we actually come home with a deficit. So I mean, love of playing and financially injuring yourself is two very important things.
Is upstate and central New York still your best crowd?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. We definitely have hot spots in a number of places in the U.S. But it's a lot of fun still to play in the hometown area.
I mentioned in the introduction that you survived a really massive brain tumor with an experimental treatment when you were in your mid-40s. How's your health today?
Health is excellent. I mean, the pituitary was damaged by the tumor, and I have to take a fair amount of medication to make up for what the pituitary can't do anymore. But I've been able to cut way back on the steroids, so all the weight that I gained when I first started taking them is almost gone. You know, I'm pretty trim and feeling good again. And you know, the voice is in good shape, and I take care of myself in dietary situations, and I work out 5 days a week.
Something like that certainly has to rattle somebody. You've spoken openly about your religion, and how does something, an experience like that, where you're given 6 months to live and then you are still here, change your outlook musically, creatively, just on a day-to-day basis?
I was very aware before I went under, as they were wheeling me to the operating room, that my life was in God's hands, you know? So that's the way I went into the operation, knowing that it could end either way, and I actually was at peace with it. It was the post-op situation that was the most traumatizing. You know, it took me 4 or 5 years to begin to feel like myself again. My physicians told me that I should be doing nothing but resting for at least a year or a year and a half. However, Foreigner, just before I went in for surgery, we were scheduled to do Japan and Australia and the countries surrounding there. And when I went in for the operation, management postponed the concerts, and not an indefinite postponement or a postponement that was based on my condition. They postponed them until September. So even though I was still fresh, really only a few months out of brain surgery, I was on a plane to Japan to perform in front of the Japanese audiences, and it was hell for me. The first show in Japan, I went on stage and I couldn't remember the words to almost any of the songs. I just went blank. So the next night and for the rest of that tour, I had words written with black marker on white paper and taped to the floor. And whenever I felt that the next verse was coming up and I didn't know how it started, I would glance down at my cheat sheets to make sure that I got a good start on the next verse. It was a tour from hell, and then we spilled into the next year, and then we did the States. You know, I don't mind being on a bus usually, but still, when you're only 6 or 8 months out of brain surgery, you don't want to be bouncing around.
When did you finally feel like you had it back?
I started feeling better in 2005. Noticeably better.
So have you become a more or less hopeful person because of that experience?
I wasn't so hopeful when I was going through it. I wondered if God was punishing me for some reason. I mean, Lord knows I could think of a million reasons he should be punishing me, but You know, I had no idea why I was going through this, you know, 7 years after the operation, around 2000, end of 2004, early 2005. It was like a fog was lifted from me. I started thinking clearly again. I was able to speak in complete sentences. I got a handle on my sleep apnea. And finally, that stuff started, all that stuff started to subside, and I began to feel like myself again. Started to enjoy life again a little bit, you know.
And did you ever fear that your voice would go away?
You know, right after my operation, when I was playing in Japan and Australia and stuff, it was not good, my voice. And I think it was due to, again, a lot of the medication that I was taking caused acid reflux, and that took a toll on my vocal cords. They were always red and raw, you know. It really shook me that I was losing the gift that I had.
Lou Gramm is the author of Jukebox Hero, My 5 Decades in Rock and Roll. He's famed for his time in Foreigner, and as you can hear, he's been through a lot to still be on the stage today. Lou Gramm, thank you so much for your time and for taking us into some of your struggles and triumphs.
My pleasure. Great to talk to you.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.